Okay, so welcome to the fourth class, for the fourth hour of the third class in this course. I count this as the third class, it began yesterday with 3 hours. So today I will very briefly point to the generic evaluation of Project One, which you can download from Frontier. Where I tell you that I have been in contact with the external examiner and he has answered my query about when he would be finishing the evaluation. He told me that he wouldn't finish today, but he will be able to do the evaluation by Friday, which is within the deadline of 3 weeks. Then my impression is that all the students are on the safe side, so that you all will pass, but of course that depends on the external examiner as well. So in this generic evaluation I tell you my impressions as to how the students perform. So I counted typical issues where one or more students had some problems and I commented on that. I'm not going to read that aloud for you, but I referred to the document that you find in Frontier, and then you can read this paper. If you have any questions, please contact me. There is one thing I would like to remark, and that is that the activities in the questions and answer part are very weak. So we look at this, then there has been very little activity. I left actually activities from the last year there because there were some comments that could be interesting for you. So there have been only two posts. This is weak because you are missing the opportunity to interact with other students, to discuss issues and so, and profit from the discussion and profit from the peer feedback. This is a very important element. You can increase, you can engage, you can increase your motivation, you can discuss things with other students and see where the difficulties are and contribute to insights and so on. It is also strange because some of the students wrote in their reports that they lamented not being part-time students and not being present here because they couldn't interact with other students in their course. Well, here's the way to interact with other students in their course. Post your comments, your questions, whatever, and engage everybody. So you are missing really the opportunity to learn and to improve and to have more fun in what you are doing. Okay, so that much about the first examination project, where I told you that the results will be due by Friday. Then I would like to remark that next Monday, 16th March, the second and last examination project for this course will occur, and it will be like the past time. I will post the examination project to Frontier. It will open Monday at 8 o'clock and you have to deliver your report by Friday at 7 o'clock in the evening. And the very same day, from 8 to 9, there will be the second multiple choice examination online. Okay? Then, the program for today is to finish the important chapters in the course of using system dynamics to model security, and I will take it up where I was yesterday, and I was here on slide 170. Where I presented to you the third version of a model to research, to do research, to understand what are the factors that characterize the life cycle of the vulnerability. Remember, vulnerability is a software bug that can be exploited by hackers for all kinds of purposes. If people discover such a bug, then that's an area where the program breaks down and loses control. And you can, by understanding how the control is lost and where you can interact, get control over the program and get it to do things that you would like to do. Like, for instance, opening a backdoor in the computer or whatever. So we started by originally developing a model for how hackers will adopt, that is, download and use a script that automates the attacks. This part, which you see here above, originally was independent, and it is very, very similar to a virus epidemic. And I have remarked many times that a virus epidemic also describes things like adoption of ideas, innovation, or even how a product is sold, and depending on how the users of this product market it by word of mouth. Then we develop the part of the model that you see in the bottom about how hosts that are vulnerable patch to become not vulnerable or hardened, and the effect of patching occurs through two mechanisms. One mechanism is patching before you are attacked, based on the perceived threat of attacks. And the other mechanism is patching after your host has been attacked. Then you have no choice. You have first to clean the system from the vulnerability that has been installed, from the attack weapon that has been installed that applies the vulnerability, and then you have to remove the vulnerability by patching. And then we connected the two models. So the idea was that the hackers that have script will conduct attacks, and the factor that decides, that motivates them to attack, is that they are seeing that they are targets to attack. So they are seeing, in some sense, that there are many hosts that are vulnerable. How do they see them? Well, they see them in that they conduct attacks, and they are successful in most cases. Over time, the number of vulnerable hosts decreases, then the hackers see less and less vulnerable hosts, and then they lose their interest in the attacks. That is, they first see that the attacks do not succeed, and then they start losing their interest and they conduct less attacks. So this connection of the two models introduces a feedback loop that I call running out of targets. From before, we had a reinforcing loop that I call news of scripting, meaning that hackers without script notice that there is a script to download, and then they adopt the script. But then over time, less and less hackers are without script, so you get a saturation, a process where this goes sooner and sooner. Not sooner, slower and slower. Then as to the patching after intrusion, I call the balancing loop learning the hard way. That is, you didn't learn in advance, you were not proactive, so you had to be punished by an intrusion before you finally patch. Okay, so this model we saw yesterday, then the final model, well, first how it behaves, and you can see the adoption curve. Hackers adapt to begin with high speed and then lower and lower because most hackers already have the script, and also because they are noticing that there is no longer fun, many attacks do not succeed. Then as to the number of hosts that were unpatched, originally 1 million, and very quickly this decreases until more or less all are patched. Then the number of intrusion, it increases because there are a lot of vulnerable hosts, and also because the hackers have fun attacking, so more and more hackers come and attack. Then sometime later there is a maximum hump, and that's where you start noticing that you have already many hackers that are attacking while the number of attacks that succeed are decreasing. And this curve starts looking similar to the curve that we have from empirical data, which was something like, let me guess, here. The red curve that you see here with the hump. It's not completely the same yet, not qualitatively, but we will manage soon. And that's where after this we move to the last version of the model. What is new here? The new thing is the fourth feedback loop, B4, which I call patching when danger is imminent. That loop expresses that the security officers in the different companies, they are understanding that attacks are occurring. So in the beginning there are few attacks, and therefore they don't feel the pressure to patch, but as they are noticing that more and more attacks occur, they are getting the news from the web, from emails, informations, whatever, then they finally they understand there is a risk to be attacked, and they decide to patch. So the mechanism that we are using here is that what they are perceiving is that there are intrusions. And here you see a time delay. This is here a delay. And this delay is the delay in processing the information. So intrusions are occurring in the real time. But the information that the intrusions are occurring needs to be registered, written down, communicated, understood. And that's the mechanism that we call perception. So perception always takes time, and that's where we, for the first time, see the need to model time delays. We have been using them liberally when we had the system archetypes. You remember we had these dotted cross lines, like here, where I am circling with the mouse. They indicate that there is a significant time delay. Other effects like this here, they are quick, they don't consume much time, so therefore we don't put these marks. But when we have a significant time delay, we indicate that, and then we need to develop a method to model these processes that are slow and take some time to occur. From here, I will then jump to the chapter in this set of slides where I introduce modeling time delays, and then I will return to this model and show you how we use that here to finish the model. Any questions? Okay. By the way, as to questions, if some of you feels the need to question why I am having a lecture and you are not present, You can send me an email and then I will answer that after the next break. Okay, so time delays. Slide 95. So, as you see, the heading is modeling with time delays helps in creating realistic models. The reason is delays are very common in real world. If you neglect them, if you don't have them in your models, then you get a behavior of your model that is very different from what is occurring in reality. There is a famous case, which you will find in the web, the so-called beer game. Don't laugh, I know you all like beer. The beer game is a model about the logistics in a company that is producing beer, and where the consumers are a bit impatient and are ordering more beer because they don't have enough, but that takes time to arrive, and because it takes time to arrive, they have difficulties in doing the right ordering. In the end, they get a deluge of beer, much more than they actually need, and they go to the opposite, ordering too little, and they end up with having too little beer, and then you get oscillations. And this is actually the beer game is a serious game because it is depicting something that occurs very often in real life when you have supply chains with long tails, where it's very difficult to predict what is going to happen if you are making orders and the orders take time to be delivered. Now, the way Wensing models time delays, actually there are two ways. One is building the stock and flow structure representing the time delay. And this we will learn to do. But there is a shortcut, because time delays occur so often, Wensing, and for that matter all the other software packages that you can use to create simulation models for system dynamics, they all have functions that allow you to shortcut and very quickly create a time delay. And the basic structure of these delay functions is like this. You have some process, we call it an input, something that changes over time. And this is over time delivered as an output with some delay indicated by these two marks. So to model this, you need these two variables first, the input process and the delayed output. In addition, you have to tell the delayed output which is its initial value. You need to initialize that, because the delay function has to represent actually a level. Without you seeing that, when we are using these functions, the delay's output is a level. When you have a level, you have to specify what is its standard initial, what is its initial value. You will see later that some delay functions in Wensing have a default initialization. So sometimes you do not see it, this part here of the initial value, because it's implicitly contained in this part here. More on that later. In Wensing, this mark that is denoting a delay doesn't appear automatically when you put in the delay function. In some other tool it does. So for instance, in PowerSim, if you insert a delay function in the definition of a variable, then Wensing itself understands that this is a delay function and puts then the marks for a delay so that it becomes visible. Okay. Then this is a summary of the most important delay functions that Vensim has. Since I am simplifying things here, I give you a summary of this. If you want to go more in the detail, you will find in the Vensim help, in the modeling guide, a thorough description of the different delays and how they behave. So, when you have delays related to perceiving information, which is what we will use in the model about the life cycle of vulnerabilities, then we use a so-called first-order delay. Later I will explain what it means, first-order and higher order and so on. And for this, Vensim has two functions that do the same. Why they do the same, I will explain in a moment. These functions are delay 1. The 1 means it's a first order delay, or smooth. They take two parameters. As I said, they are identical, so you can choose delay 1 or smooth. They will do exactly the same thing. They take two inputs. First, the input to be delayed, x, and then the average delay in time, which is t. What occurs is known in mathematics as an exponential, first-order exponential delay. I am not going to explain this. Simply take it as an act of faith. If you are interested, you can go into the literature and read more about delays. There is a very long chapter about delays. Well, not very long, but a long chapter, extensive and detailed chapter of delays in one of the books that I recommended, the book by John Sturman on business dynamics. Why do we have two identical functions? Why delay 1 and smooth? Well, the process of smoothing is an old name that has been used for a long, long time. To smooth means that what you are doing to some input make this smoother. So if it is something that is varying wildly, the smoothing process, which is actually the exponential delay, or exponential averaging, that makes it smoother. But then, in system dynamics, such process is actually a process of a time delay. And in order to be consistent, so one uses the term first-order delay. But those of you who prefer to think in terms of smoothing, perhaps because they have learned it before, please use smooth. They do exactly the same thing. So that was for information, a first order delay, also known as smooth. If you are having materials that are going through HAPS until they arrive the delivery, then you have typically several HAPS, and the number of HAPS that you have is the order of the material delay. If you don't know the order, then a good rule of thumb is to use a third order delay. Why? Because the difference between a third, fourth, fifth, sixth order delay is not so big. You will see later that there is a marked difference in behavior from a first order delay to a second order delay, and from a second order delay to a third order delay. But as you are getting higher orders, the appearance of the output doesn't change too much. Finally, there is a kind of delay where the input is preserved exactly so that the output looks like the input, but after some time. This is not the case for a first order delay or second order or third order delay. The output looks different from the input when it is delayed, because different parts of the input are delayed with different speeds. But for a fixed time delay, which is also known as a pipeline delay, because that's the way a pipeline behaves, you put in oil in the beginning, and what is entering at some time is exactly what is coming out after some time at the end of the pipeline. Now, you see two graphs below, and these two graphs are telling you, are showing you what happens to a specific input when it gets delayed. So now we concentrate on the left-hand side, where the input is a step function. So the input here is the time, and here is an input, and we assume that this input is something like this, then suddenly jumps, then it stays like this, which is the red curve that you are seeing here. Actually, it is red from the beginning. It has the number, the value of 2. Then it jumps to 10. Then it stays here. The reason why you don't see red here in the beginning is because the curves, note that all curves have a label. So the red curve has the label 1. So you can see a 1 here. Whereas this curve here, which is kind of gray, has the label 2. And this one, which is a bit darker, has the label 3. And this one, which is perhaps a bluish one, has the label 4. So you can follow the graphs, the curves, not just by the colors, but also by the labels that appear on them. So what happens in the beginning is that all these curves are equal. So curve number 1, 2, 3, and 4 are equal and have the value of 2 until time 5 here. And because they all are all on top of each other, it is the last curve that Venzin puts on top that dictates which is the color. And as you can see, the red color is kind of in the bottom, so you don't see that. But it starts here, the step function, at value 2, it continues here, then it jumps to 10, then it stays at 10. Then, curve label number 2 represents the impact of a first order delay. So it goes like this until time 5, and then it moves upwards along this curve here, which to begin with is higher than the others, then in the end is lower than the others, number 3 and 4. Whereas a third order delay, labeled with the number 3, it starts as all the others are at 2 until we have the jump in the step function, and then it is shown delayed as the curve number 3. To begin with, it doesn't move very much, then it climbs, and in the end, it climbs faster and higher than the curve number 2, but in the end, all approach the step function. And finally, the pipeline delay, which is the same as a delay fixed. Delay fixed is the name of the function in Venzin. Then it goes like this. And then after some time delay, which here is 5, from 5 to 10, then it jumps and it behaves exactly like the step function. So the pipeline reproduces the input exactly. That's why it's called also a delay fixed, because it happens the same thing after a fixed amount of time. The diagram on the right shows you what happens to a different kind of input. there we are seeing a pulse. So in the pulse, this was a step function. Now we look at the second diagram. Here we have the time. And this is the input function. And we have, I'm using the red color here. At value 2, it goes like this. And then here somewhere, 5. It goes up and behaves like this. So this is a pulse. So suppose that you have an input that is a pulse. How is this delayed according to these three possibilities? First order, third order, pipeline delay. Okay, so as before, the different curves are also labeled with numbers. So the input is labeled with the number 1. The first order is labeled with the number 2. The third order is labeled with the number 3. And the delay fix or pipeline with the number 4. So the first order delay is this one. As the pulse appears, it rises immediately, but it doesn't have the shape of a pulse. It gets something like a hump with a long, with a tail. The third order delay, when the pulse arrives, first it doesn't really take off, and then with some delay starts rising, climbs, and while the first order delay is already decaying, it gets its maximum, and then it has a long tail and decays. Finally, the pipeline delay reproduces this pulse input exactly after some fixed amount of time, in this case after 5 months or whatever the axis is. So it's kind of difficult to recognize from the delayed output how the input was. Of course, with some experience, you can recognize that. So a step function results in something climbing and achieving asymptotically the value of the step function, but it occurs differently depending on the different delays. And when it comes to the pulse, you get some extended pattern for the first order and the third order delay, whereas the pipeline reproduces, the pipeline delay reproduces exactly the input. And you could operate with other examples and see what happens. In all cases, VenSim has a function to do that. For the third order delay, the function is called delay 3, and it takes the input parameter and the average delay time t. For the pipeline delay, you have 3 parameters: the input, the time, and I am a little bit unsure as to what the I is. Maybe it's the initialization. Delays the input x for a fixed time t starting with I. I'm a bit confused because I think that you have at least a delay function that doesn't need this. We can check that with VenSim in a moment. Now, going back to the first order delay, here is a bit more detail. So use the first order delay for recognizing information or perceiving information, but because the information also leads you to what to expect in the future, we can also say that this is about adjusting your expectations. So what you are seeing here is how you would model the first order delay if you were using stock and flows. And in the left, you see how you would model that using Vensim's delay function. So first we need to understand the process that is being depicted to the right. Consider, suppose you have a business and you are trying to predict what is going to happen to the orders for your product. For this you need to perceive what is happening, and the perception is the same as what you would expect in the future. What you are perceiving, you expect to continue. So therefore, perception and expectation are here two sides of the same coin. So the expectation of orders, that's a level. And and that represents your expectation or your perception of what is happening. But then, you have here the customer orders arriving. This is a process that changes over time. That is simply what the customers are doing. The way you form perceptions is that you are comparing what is arriving, what impression with the expectation or perception that you had from before. If there's a big difference, or if there's a difference between what is arriving from orders from what you have been so far perceiving, then there is a gap between these two. And this gap is what is leading you to change your expectations of orders. EOR is a shortcut, an acronym for expectation of orders. But then, how fast should you change your perception or your expectation? This is different from person to person, and also you will also adjust to the situation. Sometimes you will have to adjust your expectations quickly, other times slower. If you choose a short time to adjust your expectations, then you are following very closely your input. But if your input is noisy, then that means that your impressions, your expectations, your perceptions are also noisy. Suppose you are trading in the stock and chains. So you have shares, you buy, you sell, and so on. Obviously, a key to earn money is to form the right expectation. You would like to know, is this share rising so that it will be good for me to buy it now when it still is cheap, and then when it is expensive to sell it and make money? Or is it going down, in which case it's better to sell what I have now to avoid a loss, and perhaps wait until it is low value and then buy so that it can rise and so on? Now, you all know that the stock exchange is fluctuating a lot, up and down, because there are many factors that influence the behavior of the value of the stock. News, whether somebody which has a lot of share has decided to sell them today, then the price drops, but tomorrow it will rise again, and so on. So you need to form the right expectations. And if you choose a short time to adjust your expectations, you will have a noisy perception, as much noise as is in reality. So the time to adjust expectation, while it depends on people, some are more impatient than others, still it has also to do with the nature of the project. Depending on how noisy it is, you will choose a value that allows you to see the big picture without being confused by the many up and downs. I will create this model in a moment after the break, but then I will show you that we will get exactly the same result if we, instead of the pattern to the right, use the pattern to the left, where it's a bit simpler because we don't need to put in the rate change in expectation of orders, and also we do not have to think of the level. We just put down expectation of orders as a name. This said, whenever you have a delay, then you do have expectation of order. That was nonsense. Whenever you have a delay, you have a level. So I repeat, whenever you see something to the left where you have a delayed function in Benzim, then you know that the end of the arrow with the delay is pointing to something that in reality is a level. You don't need to put it as a level because Benzim has a shortcut for that. It is hiding in the fact that you are using a delay function. Okay, so I will create this model after the break. But then I will show you the model first. So here you see the model where I have done it for security incidents. So it's about the perceived or the expected security incidents, where we assume that the real data from the real world starts with this value, then at some time it jumps high, step function, and the perceived or expected security incidents will be a curve here that starts equally and then it rises asymptotically. Again, you don't see the red curve because Benzim has put it under the blue curve. You could change the order and see it differently. And this, we will see, behaves exactly the same way as this construction, where I am putting the expected security incidents here, connecting that to the security incidents with the delayed function, and you see the same result. Here is the input, the security incidents, a step function, and here you see the delayed version, the red curve, which is the expected or perceived security incidents. So after the break, I will build this model for you, and you should have your laptop and do it jointly with me. So a break until 1:15.